Welcome to In Season, where we explore connections between people, land, plants, and wildlife here in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm Teresa Retzloff, and today we're exploring a really unusual plant, crop, thing, and I should say unusual really only in a cultural sense. It's unusual to me, it maybe is unusual to a lot of people in our region, but seaweed is something that for many people all over the world, it is something that they would eat every day, maybe multiple times a day. It's a really common vegetable. It's just that here, it's maybe not so common. And so to help us explore and learn more about this fascinating plant and crop is Alana Kiefer. She is. She has a great company called Shifting Tides, where she does workshops and education about responsible foraging for seaweed and shellfish here on the Oregon coast. She's also worked a lot with Oregon Seaweed, which is a seaweed farm located at the Port of Garibaldi. So there's a lot to dig into here, and I'm really excited to talk to Alana about it. Welcome, Alana.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Always excited.
So great. I know. Well, and there's a lot. I mean, I'm excited because it's really unusual. And thinking about it both as a cultivated crop and then also as a wild foraged crop thing is amazing. Before we really dig into it, I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself and your connection to the Oregon coast and how you got involved in the work that you're doing, because you have one of the most unusual jobs I think I've ever encountered. So tell us about yourself.
Yeah, my name is Alana Kiefer. I have been on the Oregon coast about 12, almost 13 years now. I moved here when I was still in high school, so I finished high school at Seaside High, and have been working in Oregon's rocky intertidal habitat since I moved here. So originally was in Cannon Beach, down at the base of Haystack Rock, and just educating people about the life that we have on the Oregon coast and in our intertidal zones. Studied marine biology and then actually moved down to the Channel Islands, where I was surrounded by kelp forests, and I fell in love with kelp forests as an ecosystem and had heard about seaweed and kelp farming that was starting to pick up in our country, but never really knew if I would find myself there, but was definitely interested in what was going on. And I moved back up here in 2020, and there just so happened to be a Pacific dulse farm that was being built in Garibaldi, so pretty close to where I was living. And yeah, quickly got involved, helped them finish building the farm, and then kind of had this seaweed farm in my lap to figure out what to do with.
did you have any idea or experience in how to cultivate seaweed, or was this like learning on the job?
It was kind of learning on the job for all of us. I had experience a bit in aquarium systems. So on Catalina, I was building aquarium systems and keeping them up to date, and essentially it feels like a big aquarium. You're pumping water into tanks and keeping them clean, and there's environmental conditions that you're working with, but no, I had never farmed. I had never grown seaweed. It was all very new.
Yeah. So let's talk about that first. Let's dig into the cultivation of seaweed, because it is something that, you can do both on land and you can do it in the ocean as well.
Yes.
But so what's happening here in Garibaldi is like these large tanks. Like if you go to the Port of Garibaldi, you might see this farm, these large white tanks bubbling away. And how is the seaweed growing in there?
Yeah, it's a really good question. We are a land-based seaweed farm, and we're a relatively large land-based seaweed farm for others that are in the country. And the way that our seaweed grows and the way that our farm operates, all seaweed needs is sunlight and seawater. There's a ton of nutrients within seawater. And as long as you have those two things, pretty much, seaweed will be happy and seaweed will grow.
That
if you're
is
in the
so
right
cool.
conditions and the right temperature. You know, every seaweed has a different temperature range and salinity range that it likes. But we are growing a native seaweed, Pacific dulse. So we pump water into our tanks. It circulates through the tanks and it goes right back out into the bay. So we have a pump out on a piling, and every day at high tide, we want highest tides to get the saltiest, cleanest water. The water hits a float switch and it turns our pumps on, fills up our tanks, and the seaweed itself is just bubbling around, like you said, in the tank. So this is a strain of Pacific dulse that Oregon State has been cultivating for 30 to 40 years, and it no longer has an attachment point. So in the wild, it would have what we call a holdfast that secures it to a rock, But in our tanks, it's just free floating, which allows it to...
Just floating around.
It's just floating around. It's really satisfying to watch float around.
And growing. Just floating around.
Yeah. So dulse is a clonal species. So it essentially grows in these clumps. They almost look like kale, a red fluffy kale. And those clumps break apart and then they keep growing.
Like the two smaller clumps then grow.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, so cool.
So we're never dealing with seeds or spores in the case of seaweed. Our seed stock, quote unquote, is just seaweed that we put in a tank and we let it continuously grow.
So you would never harvest everything from a tank because you always want to leave something to keep growing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So if we have a large order, we try to take some from multiple tanks instead of emptying a tank.
How fast does it grow?
It totally depends on the season and the conditions that you're working with.
So because sunlight, yeah. You know, I mean, I can on the Oregon coast, that may not always be in abundance.
Yes. So the growth rate is pretty high. It can be about 2 to 3% per day. That is in the ideal conditions. So with the right temperature, the right salinity, and the right amount of sunlight. In the summer, we obviously have more sun, but the issue that we deal with is heat. So we're having more and more heat waves. They heat up our tanks. We're having to find ways to cool our tanks to keep our growth rate in line. In the winter, the seaweed is much happier because the water is extremely cold, but we don't have as much sun. So we're kind of playing around now with some grow lights. We're working with OSU.
So it is just like farming. Where it's all about the weather.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And every year we deal with different issues.
And you're complaining. Oh, this is a really familiar conversation to me. We're complaining about the weather and crops. This is so great. But so, I mean, so then you harvest it. And do you eat it fresh or dry? Because, I mean, like, my main experience with seaweed, eating seaweed, is probably, like, sushi. You know, like the nori that's wrapped around your sushi.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, maybe a little bit of something in a bowl of miso soup. Or, like, I love these little shaky, you know, seaweed or kelp flakes that I tend to put on my popcorn to try and reduce my salt intake because I'm trying to be healthy. So, but there's so much more than that. And I don't know if I've ever eaten just fresh seaweed, like just put a piece of fresh seaweed in my mouth.
Yeah, it's not very common on the market. It's not found on the market very much. And that's one of the things that by growing Pacific dulse, which has a relatively longer shelf life than a lot of seaweeds, you can keep it in your fridge for 7 to 10 days.
Like a bag of salad mix.
Absolutely, yeah, just like kale. I compare it to kale a lot in terms of its use. It doesn't necessarily taste like kale, but
it's texture.
Can do a lot. Yeah, you can do a lot with the Pacific dulse that you can do with kale.
Do you just eat it raw?
You can just eat it raw, yeah. So this has been kind of my biggest, for so long I was like, how did I become a seaweed salesperson? I don't know anything about sales or marketing, but I do know education, and I do know how to teach people about marine ecosystems. And I grew up in a family of chefs, so I have this love of food.
Yeah.
And I now just feel like I only educate people on how to eat seaweed, which there's a ton of different ways. And yeah, you're right that this is not a crop that people here are super familiar with. And our main familiarity with it is nori sheets that you can now find at any big store.
Which
this is not. No, yeah. Nori sheets are pretty processed. They're made with a seaweed called nori, which we do have on the Oregon coast. But nori is one species of seaweed. There are thousands of species of seaweed. And I deal with this a lot. I'm actually not the biggest fan of nori sheets, funny enough. I'm not someone who you'll find just snacking on nori sheets.
Uh-huh.
Love them in a roll of sushi, but I'm not a snacker on nori sheets. Some people love them. Some people don't love them. And people tend to think if they don't like nori sheets, they assume that they hate all seaweed. I've had this conversation with a number of people. And that is like saying that if you hate steamed Brussels sprouts, you hate any vegetable cooked anyway.
Yeah.
They all have different flavors. They all have different uses. There are specific ways to process certain seaweeds where they're more palatable. So there's a lot of different ways to use them. Pacific dulse, to me, is one of the most versatile seaweeds. So you can't necessarily take every seaweed you find on the beach and throw it into a pan and stir fry it. They will not all do anything that's very edible. Pacific dulse, you can. So yeah, you can eat it fresh, just like a salad. You're never just gonna eat a bowl of seaweed straight off the beach. Like most people wouldn't just eat a bowl of kale not dressed. You're going to put dressings on it, right? Yeah, I mean, we all
but
have.
But I'm weird, but I know.
But it's to say it's an ingredient, right? So if I'm making a salad with dulse, I'll use a vinaigrette that maybe has an acid in it. It breaks down the toothy crunchiness of the seaweed a bit. I'll mix it with other salad greens a lot. So I'll make a normal green salad, but I'll chop up a little bit of dulse, throw it in there. It's red, so it adds a beautiful color, texture, salinity. You can also pan fry it, so that's kind of my favorite thing to do. And that's what I do in cooking demos a lot because it's fun to watch. But when you put it on heat, it immediately changes colors. So it goes from red to green.
Ooh.
And you can put it in a pan just with a little bit of oil. You can make it really crispy. And it pulls out these way more smoky umami flavors than the fresh. The fresh is mild and a little salty and crunchy, but nothing overpowering. I throw it into pretty much every veggie stir fry that I'm ever making nowadays. It adds the salt, so you don't have to add additional salt to whatever you're making. You can also oven roast it, just like you can with kale, and make crispy little dulse chips.
I'm getting really hungry now.
Yeah, they're really good. Those are really good. And then, like you said, the dried is also an avenue. So the fresh is something we do. We provide it to a lot of grocery stores, co-ops, like the Astoria Co-op that have it now in their fresh produce case. But the dried is way more
familiar
it's more
to people.
Familiar to people, yeah. And it's less intimidating because there's not a shelf life that you have to
work
around. So
it could be
around,
like an entryway to getting to use seaweed a little bit. If you want to start with dried and maybe you can move your way to fresh. I will say too, to suggest to people, the Oregon Seaweed website, which has a lot of really interesting information about their operation and what they do and links to where you can get seaweed. They have a list of really great recipes on this site. Some of them sound really, really good. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try that. So if you're curious about what would you do with seaweed beyond just the suggestions that Alana's made, I would definitely suggest checking them as OregonSeaweed.com. OregonSeaweed.com. So check them out because there's some really cool things that you can do. And I talk a little bit about, so seaweed is really good for you.
Yes.
And this is something that's fascinating to me. Well, there's two things. Two things are fascinating to me. Many things are fascinating, but so two main ones. Really, really good for you. So talk about the nutrients. Like, it's really a healthy food.
Yeah, seaweeds are some of the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet. So a lot of people, when they talk about seaweed and nutrients, bring up the iodine and the iron. Most seaweeds have pretty high iron and iodine levels, and a lot of people are lacking those. They are also really high in omega-3s for any other plant source. They are high in vitamin B12, which a lot of vegans and vegetarians are lacking. The biggest one for Pacific Dulse that we see is the protein content, which is pretty surprising.
You don't think about protein coming from a plant.
Yeah, you don't. And most seaweeds and kelps do have some amount of protein, but they all vary a little bit in their nutrient profiles. But Pacific Dulse can be about 30 to 40% protein.
That is so mind-blowing to me. That is so cool. So there's one other thing that I thought was fascinating about, especially the cultivation of seaweed, in that Oregon seaweed, you hear a lot in agriculture now about, you know, operations trying to be carbon neutral, right? But Oregon seaweed describes itself as a carbon negative operation. So it's not just that they're not adding carbon to the atmosphere in this operation, but it's actually sucking carbon out. So seaweed absorbs carbon. Seaweed and kelp, they absorb carbon, right?
Yeah, they do. Yep.
That is that is so cool. I mean, and wow.
Yeah. You know, all plants are absorbing some amount of carbon, right? And seaweeds are an algae, so technically not a plant, and you can dive into that.
Okay. Just using plant in the loosest possible term.
No, but absolutely.
Yeah, so the algae is,
But seaweeds are incredibly efficient at photosynthesis. And this is one of the reasons that seaweed farming is starting to pick up more and more in the U.S. So they grow incredibly fast. This is easier for me to visualize with kelps because kelps grow as a long strand. And in their kelp farming facilities, which are not necessarily year-round, they have a season for their harvest, the kelps grow, bull kelp, for instance, which makes up the Oregon Coast kelp forest, can grow up to 10 inches per day in the right conditions.
That is so huge.
And it's not even the fastest growing kelp. Giant brown kelp can grow up to 3 feet per day.
That is so, and all the while just absorbing massive amounts of carbon.
Yes, so in that process, they're absorbing carbon, they're emitting oxygen. And in the wild, right, our oceans are considered a carbon sink because of a lot of these seaweeds and kelps and little microalgae. They absorb that carbon and then they sink to the seafloor and that carbon gets stored. In the avenue of kelp farming and seaweed farming, there's still a lot of research that needs to be done on where that carbon is ending up. It kind of depends on the end use of the seaweed, but there's very few inputs to these farms when compared to our standard agriculture practices, right? So of course we still use energy by pumping our water. If you're doing this offshore, you have a boat that you're using fuel for. There's definitely inputs to keep in mind, but yeah, we just actually had our carbon traced, and I don't have any of the numbers on it, but it was pretty astonishing to see like how much carbon we're actually using. And Tillamook is all on hydroelectric, so our power is operating on hydro. So yeah, definitely just fascinating to think about.
I just love those aspects of this as a crop and thinking about algae and seaweeds and kelps as just things to explore more, because what a great resource for humans in this marine environment to tap into as a food source. Is good for you, good for the environment. Yeah, it's just on so many levels. It's so cool. If you are just joining us for today's In Season, I'm wondering what the heck we're talking about. I'm talking to Alana Kiefer, and we're clearly talking about seaweed and kelp. Alana works with a company called Oregon Seaweed down in Garibaldi, where they're farming seaweed. But I want to turn and talk about the other work that you do with Shifting Tides and this company that you've started, where you are helping, you're leading workshops and teaching people about wild foraging of seaweeds and shellfish. So talk about that work and what that's like.
Yeah, my biggest passion over the past 12 years of being on the Oregon coast has really been in the education space. So getting people out into these ecosystems and learning about this place by being kind of just immersed in them. So for a long time, I've worked in, just general education and exploration around Oregon's rocky intertidal habitats. And about 2 years ago, I launched my own business called Shifting Tides that is a space to not only do this, get people out exploring these ecosystems, but also incorporate some aspect of food and foraging. And it wasn't really until my work in food systems where it was brought to light for me how disconnected a lot of people are to where their food is coming from, me included. And I grew up in a family of chefs and restaurant owners, but being able to look at our ocean as, this incredibly abundant food source, resource that we have, and really focusing on getting people to eat more local seafood and just know where your food is coming from. So I host, foraging and education workshops throughout the spring and summer focused on shellfish and seaweeds, and do a lot of work with restaurants to, host dinner events or food events where we're celebrating the use of these foods. And that includes a huge culinary series, Winter Waters, that is coming up very soon.
I'm very excited about this. I'm so glad you brought this up. And I just wanted to preface what we're going to talk about right now, Winter Waters, with a note that we are recording this in winter of 2025, late January 2025. So if you're listening to this podcast at any other time but that, maybe go to the Winter Waters website, check out Shifting Tides, and look up and see like what might be happening or what might be coming up, because it might not be current to what Alana's talking about right now. But this is a really cool series coming up. And if you are listening to this live or in February, check out Winter Waters, their website. There's an amazing amount of events you've got coming up. Describe some of them.
Yeah, so Winter Waters is we call it a seafare culinary series, and it's hosted throughout the month of February. We just kind of take over a month and we host all sorts of different events that either our chef friends want to host or our artist friends. And it began as a celebration of seaweed and a way to incentivize, I won't use the word force, but incentivize restaurants to use seaweed in some capacity. It has now been kind of a larger celebration of all of Oregon's seafood and seafare, but our one rule is that you have to use seaweed in some space. So
it's a good challenge.
a lot of desserts have come out of it. Some funky stuff has come out of it. We've been, very surprised. But we have 23 events coming up in the 28 days of February.
That's a lot of events.
It's a lot of events. A lot of them are food related. So they're either dinner events. We have some sit-down dinners. We have some free trivia nights where you get to come learn about seaweed and local seafood. And we have menu specials going on at places that are participating. We have a seaweed cyanotype workshop, so you get to come and make art using the sunlight, which is pretty cool, or just UV if we don't have sun. And we this year have a Blue Foods Forum, is what we're calling it, that's focused to people in the industry that want to make lasting change in the food system space. So hoping to have conversations with people about how to improve our food systems and get more local seafood onto people's plates. And as part of that, we have a Seafair speakeasy event where we'll be incorporating education and touch tanks, and a lot of conservation organizations will be there to talk about their work, all while we're enjoying food from like five different chefs who are coming to have different little seaweed bites available.
It sounds exhausting, but it also sounds so cool, and I want to go to all of them. And so you're going to be really tired in March.
Yeah, but I'll be eating great food, so it's
You
fine.
Will be eating great food. And, I mean, these do seem like really great ways to connect people to food and to explore the abundance of what's available here, because it blows my mind. Oregon has such rich, just indigenous foods, mm-hmm. things that are native to here that oftentimes people are unfamiliar with or encounter in really limited ways. One thing I wanted to ask you about with your workshops, you know, in harvesting seaweed and shellfish, I mean, I'm assuming that there are good ways and not so good ways to do it. So are you working with people to understand that? Because I think about it from coming at it from like a mushroom foraging point of view. And I think a lot of people who are familiar with mushroom foraging know that it's not just etiquette, it's like there's ways that you can harvest responsibly so that that plant can then regenerate and continue, or the fungi can regenerate and continue to grow. But if you do it, if you over harvest or do something, you can really damage it and prevent it from being alive.
Yeah.
So is the same true for seaweed?
So that's a lot of what I'm doing, is teaching the sustainable practices of harvesting your own seafood. And there, for seaweed specifically, there is, confusingly, it's not regulated by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, which regulates everything else that you harvest on the coast. So it's a little bit tricky to find this information. And you don't need a license for seaweed harvesting, but there are rules and there are seasons. So it's from March to mid-June. The biggest thing to keep in mind is that you are actually not allowed, it's written into the rules, to just be pulling seaweed off of rocks. And that is because the growth structure that's attached to the rock is where it regrows from. So ideally you want scissors or a knife, and you want to be cutting seaweed off the rock, leave a little bit of what's there to regrow throughout the season. Really good question. There are definitely ways to keep it sustainable. And that goes with shellfish as well. There's limitations on how much you can take, same with seaweed. And Oregon does have some of the most sustainable commercial fisheries in the world. And that's due to, you know, rigorous research and studies that they've done around our fisheries and hoping to keep them sustainable.
That's encouraging
to
know. I mean, because these are amazing resources. And I think, you know, human beings have been interacting with these species as a food source for millennia. Mm-hmm. And it really does feel like sometimes it's just this more modern disconnect that we have. So many people don't encounter nature on a regular basis, and certainly are not participating in the active harvesting of the food that they're going to eat. So they may not be aware of some of the damage that they could do if you're doing it in a thoughtless way.
Yeah.
But if you're doing it in a mindful way, it's great.
Yeah. Which is to say, it's the same with your decisions around purchasing food, mm-hmm. right? So one of the things, that huge mission of Winter Waters, is to get people, to get restaurants using local Oregon seafood, which sounds really easy when we live in a place that's surrounded by seafood, but
this has always blown my mind.
And if you come to the Oregon coast, it's easy to assume that if you get seafood at a restaurant, it's coming from here, but 90% of the seafood sold on the Oregon coast is imported.
This is so weird to me, and this is like another whole thing. I'm sure it's loaded with minefields that we could walk into, but I think it's really important for people to know that and to ask questions, because it seems weird to me and to so many people that we can have these abundant fisheries here, mm-hmm. and yet that's not what we're eating.
Yeah, and it really does come down to asking questions about where your seafood comes from. You know, a lot of restaurants, or they're working off the demand of their customers, so... Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to be snobby when you go into a place and ask where it's coming from, but to educate yourself on where it's coming from and know if you want to be buying it or find somewhere that has something local and more sustainable it's huge.
Yeah, I always remember the Monterey Bay Aquarium used to have this really great card that I don't know if they still make them.
They still do, yep.
So look and see if you can find one. But it had these guides to seafood and like basically like a thing you could keep in your pocket and bring out at a restaurant. And it had sort of like a, you know, red, green, or red... yellow and green. It's like best choice. Is it okay choice? And like avoid this because this is endangered or this is really struggling.
Yeah. And it's the Monterey Bay Seafood Watch. And I think they now have an app.
Oh, cool. Well, that would make so much sense.
I could be wrong, but I think
so. Check that out if you're curious, because I think it is good too when you, I mean, I feel like this as a farmer here on the Oregon coast, you know, when people go into restaurants and ask, well, where are your salad greens from? Or is anything on this menu from a local farm? You're also indicating to them that you care about that and you care about food systems and you want to see more what's being grown and produced here in our region incorporated into our local economy. And that's a really cool way to do it. So do it with your seafood too.
Yes, absolutely.
I am just, this is so mind-blowing to me. I mean, aside from the fact that I now feel like I want to like challenge myself to eat more seaweed this year because it's so intriguing to me. And eat some fresh seaweed.
Yes.
Do you feel hopeful about this? I mean, I feel like it's hard. There's so many challenges to our ecosystems and our environment now. Do you see the oceans and the nearshore ocean being able to survive and thrive?
I am hopeful. I do, yeah, we obviously need new solutions to growing food for a growing population and growing foods that have a lot of nutrients and that can feed a lot of people and relatively fast, right? And aquaculture and mariculture are huge avenues for this. Aquaculture has gotten a really bad rep in recent years because there is harmful aquaculture. But if we can focus on the beneficial and the positive aquaculture and take that route and continue to grow it and educate people on it and, yeah, get people to, again, ask these questions and make better decisions, I am very hopeful.
I want to just dip briefly into, people along the Oregon coast don't necessarily think about, you know, what's happening in the oceans just off the, you know, just what I'm looking at, and it just likes water, but underneath the water, we have historically had really abundant kelp forests, and they're struggling a little bit right now.
Yeah.
We've lost some key species that eat that. I think it all comes down to like urchins and sea stars and otters and kelp, and it's a complicated system that we're trying to begin to address.
Yeah, and one of the ways they're trying to address it is through food, actually. So there are, we've lost about 70% of our kelp forests in the past 10 years, which is shocking. Our kelp forests are, they play into our
and
fisheries.
And a huge carbon sink,
yes,
too.
Huge
and fisheries,
carbon sink,
yeah.
They play into our fisheries
habitat
immensely.
For fish.
Yeah, so it will end up affecting us at some point, if not already. But they, the issue has been a spike in urchin populations, which are native species. But again, we've wiped out their predators. And one of the ways that they're trying to address this now, instead of just going out and culling urchins, which is what they're doing in a lot of places, urchin is a huge food source to a lot of cultures, right? So they can harvest these urchins off of these reefs. They can they have to beef them up a little bit. They feed them Pacific dulse in tanks. And then they can go to a commercial market, which a lot of the work there, again, is educating people on how to eat
sea urchin,
sea urchin, because it's not something we eat a lot of. But
I will say, it is delicious.
Yeah.
And
it
was always my favorite. I'm like, I can't believe I'm eating sea urchin, but it's really good.
Yeah, you have to get past what you're eating, but it is really good.
I mean, I think if you just, exactly. A lot of it, and I think this too, with seaweed, with all these things, it's just getting past this idea of like, I don't eat that.
Yeah.
And anyway, get past it, everybody.
Yep.
Eat seaweed. Try it. I know. Alana, this has been such a great conversation. And just before we close, because we're about to run out of time, tell people how they can find out more about what you're doing.
Yes. So Shifting Tides will have workshops through the spring and summer. And I have a website where I post all of those and a newsletter on shiftingtidesnw.com, so Northwest. Winter Waters is going to be happening through the month of February and the first weekend of March because we couldn't help ourselves. So you can find those events at winterwaterspnw.com. And Oregon Seaweed has a ton of fun recipes and places that you can buy seaweed at OregonSeaweed.com.
Connect to the ocean this year, folks. Eat some seaweed and connect with Alana because she's amazing. Thank you so much. And thanks to everyone for joining us for In Season today. I hope to talk to you again soon.